What do you think? Okay, cool. All right, so now, if you go to the website, you'll see that I have put this, I sneaked this somewhere in the semester somewhere, either at the end or sometimes right after chapter 6, and it's called Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return. Now, we're basically just going back to about chapter 6, what we've just done in this chapter, and taking a look at it in a more, I don't know what to call it. This is what, what you will see if and when you take an upper division or graduate level finance and investments class. So that's basically what we're doing. So I've already put them on the hard drive here. So net present value. An optional impromptu discussion of net present value and internal rate of return. Not going to be on the exam, folks. This is not on the exam. Okay, so don't worry. No. Yeah, we don't have to do. But this is what you're going to see if you go to State or one of the private universities and take a, upper level division class or certainly graduate. They're going to really throw this at you in graduate school, and they're going to do a whole lot more, which a lot of it is, I think, ridiculous. After this presentation, you throw this thing up, and we've already done the spreadsheets. You saw the spreadsheet. If you come to the investment club, we do them a lot. I think the students are sick of them by now, but we do them a lot in the investment club. You've already created these models, these discounted cash flow models. Now let's take it one step further. Present value and valuation. A fundamental assertion of finance holds that the value of a stock or any investment is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Dividends, stock prices, interest payments, principal repayments, rent if it's a real estate project. But present value is not limited to stocks and bonds. We can calculate the present value of a future stream of income from any sources. Factories, bridges, water projects, nuclear reactors. You already know how to compute the present value of any stream of income. You know that you can use this scary formula, but you don't have to use the formula. We use the present value tables. But if you want to use these formulas, they're pretty, once you put it in the spreadsheet, it's done. In this version, the cash flows were dividends and the price of the stock when we forecast we were ready to sell. But it could be rent from a real estate project, bridge tolls from a bridge, water authority, the electricity generation. So here's the example we've used that we started with, we come back to. We've got this present value equal to the present value of future dividends. Here are the dividends in this year, next year, two more years. And then we think, value line tells us, we do our trajectory, what we think it's going to be in a few years, $27. And we're expecting a required rate of 12%. And what we did is we calculated the present value. And we're going to get to net present value in a bit. The present value is what we believe the stock is worth right now. It's selling for $22. We believe it's worth a little bit more, $23.81. So if our required rate of return is 12%, this is a pretty good stock to buy. And then we created the spreadsheet, which made life a whole lot easier. And we saw that, using the spreadsheet, it makes life a lot easier. And then, of course, we can use the computer. Since $23.81 is greater than the current market price, that tends to trip people up. We have to pay. No. We're paying $23.02 for it. We think it's worth $23.81. Then we would consider this a potentially good investment for our required rate of return. The present value told us what we thought the future stream of income was worth today. And if it were roughly equal to or greater than the current market price, what we had to pay for that future stream of income, then we predicted that this was a pretty good return for us, for our desired required rate of return. But remember, all you got to do is change that required rate of return, and oh my goodness, do the models all of a sudden go wild. I mean, the changes are sometimes very dramatic. Because as you change the required rate of return, the present value changes sometimes greatly. So, what is NPV? Net present value. And that's what they're going to stress in graduate school. They're going to
No, we don't want to know present value. We want net present value.
This is the same thing. Net present value takes into account all cash flows, inflows, money coming in, and all cash outflows. And if net present value is positive, then it is a potentially good investment. If net present value is negative, then it's a potentially not a good investment. It's the same thing, except we have to include all outflows, which makes sense, especially when there are outflows that happen in the middle or at the end of your investment life. It is much more popular when you get to upper division, graduate level finance classes at the university. So here is a net present value. Sometimes they put P0, price at time zero, or T0. In other words, we pay $22. There's the outflow. The outflow that we had to pay to get this stream of income. And then here comes the inflows. And if we take that outflow into the mix, we wind up with a positive net present value. So what we're saying is, this thing is worth $1.60 more than what we have to pay for it. That's basically what we're saying. It's positive because the present value is greater than the market price. I mean, that's all they're saying. So, are you sick and tired of calculating present value using the present value tables? Yes? No? Darn. I haven't done my job. My job is for you to be dreaming about this stuff. In the middle of the night, I see present value table. You know how to calculate, understand what it means to discount a stream of future value, future cash flows, and I've done my job. And it's easier than using the exponential formulas, but you also know how to use the easy way. I hope some of you play with the spreadsheets, because spreadsheets make it so much easier. So let's now take another look, this time adding net present value. So let's make sure I go. Okay. So let's go to the spreadsheet, which is already on the computer here. And so, are you still on? So here's the spreadsheets that we created. You saw a few of them. Here's the present value, where we just looked at the future cash flows, and we put a required rate of return 12%, and we saw that changes as we change the required rate of return. And then we don't have to do all this. We don't have to do all this because spreadsheets have a present value calculation built in. So let's take a look at that present value calculation. Okay. So here we did all that we do. So notice, see here, the spreadsheet is creating this table. The spreadsheet is creating this table on the fly. It's saying, where is it? Where did it go? Yeah, here it is. 1 divided by the required, 1 plus the required rate of return to the first power, to the second power, to the third power, to the fourth power. So it's making these numbers. It's calculating these numbers because it can. It's a computer. It can do it a whole lot faster than we can do it and more accurately. But with a formula, you don't even type in. You don't have to type in these present value multipliers because we just type in the cash flows, and then we have a net present value formula that says what's the required rate of return. We require 12%, and that's sitting right there, from B13 to B16. Now, here's the net present value calculation. We put in the negative $22 that we have to pay for the item, for the investment at time zero, and then the cash flows, and then it's the same formula, net present value, but this time it includes a cash outflow, and we wind up with $1.60. Cool? Is that cool? Okay, great. Now, what's going on here? And then here, we'll come back to this in a bit. Here is a graph of the net present values if we change the rate, anywhere from 0 up to 20%. And we see at 0%, the thing is worth about $14. And as our required rate of return gets higher and higher and higher, and here is where we expected it to be 12%. and it was like $1.60. And then here is the point where net present value now becomes negative. All of a sudden, we're gonna come back to that in a bit. So let's go. Okay, this brings us back to internal rate of return. The very popular measure that business people and investors use when measuring the rate of return from a stream of future income. You will also learn how to compute the internal rate of return manually if you go to an upper division or graduate level finance class. Specifically, the internal rate of return is the desired required rate of return. We initially said we want 12%. But what the spreadsheet is going to do for us and what you have to do manually one or two times, hopefully your prof won't be a sadistic individual, is you find where that net present value crosses the zero, where it becomes zero. Huh? The internal rate of return is the desired required rate of return where the net present value equals zero. Well, see, it's easier to show you than it is to explain it to you. So let's go back to the spreadsheet. And so what we did, watch what happens as we change the. So right now we've got $1.60, right? If we go to 5%, it says, hey, $7.60. If we go to 16%, it says, whoa, wait a minute. You know, it's not worth it to you. You want something different. Because if you want 16%, which I don't think you should want, but if you wanted 16%, it ain't going to do it for you. And so that's what we did here. What we did for already is we typed in these numbers, zero. Actually, I didn't type none. I created this column and then let it do its thing. It did it all. And so as the required rate of return gets higher and higher and higher, the net present value becomes less because it's worth less to us until finally it crosses that line. And now here's how you have to do it manually. You have to choose. Okay, let's try 12%. Oh, it's positive. Okay, how about 16%? Oh, it's negative. And then what you have to do is, okay, try 13%. And then 15%. See what you have to do? You have to work your way until finally you get to 0%. That's a pain in the ass. I mean, it's not that hard. It just takes a whole lot of time. That's why we have computers. Any math majors in here? You know what that's called? Can you do that? It's called Newton's method, but it's just trivia. At a bar sometime, you want to. I got a trivia question for you. Okay, write down these four cities. Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Reno, and San Diego. Which city is further west? Which city? She's got it already.
Reno.
Is Reno further west than Los Angeles?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Check it out on the map. That'll get you some money in a bar some night when somebody's really drunk. There's a Los Angeles. No. Because California goes like this. Okay. So you got it? You see what's happening here? That's what they're going to make you do once or twice, and then you'll use the spreadsheet to do it. So now, back to the comments. Okay. So how do you do it? Without a spreadsheet, it ain't easy. It's a real pain in the ass. Whatever. I have not done it since I left graduate school. Plus, as we saw on the spreadsheet, we're not there yet. Okay, so now let's start using internal rate of return, because this is when you start talking with the big boys and girls. They want to know internal rate of return. And again, we have a spreadsheet that does it for us. So here's the same cash flows, -$22, and then the cash inflows. And we use the formula. It's pretty easy to use. This is what spreadsheets are all about. Internal rate of return from B3 to B7. You know, if you haven't used spreadsheets, play with a spreadsheet. It's not that hard. And then we guess at 12%. You can actually leave it at zero, and the spreadsheet will try to do its thing. Now, if your cash flows, sometimes internal rate of return cannot be calculated. Your cash flows might be really, really strange, and it will come back saying, I don't know what to do with this. NA, it'll say not applicable. But most of the time, if it's a reasonable investment, it'll come back and say, okay, I got it. Okay, cool? And then, watch what, here's our original one. Watch what happens to the present value when we plug in 1451. The present value becomes the same as what we paid for it. See? Make sense? Okay, if not, don't worry about it. You already know how to do that. Okay, so now, we use the yield to maturity approximation formulas, the yield to call approximation formulas. That's what they ask you to do on the Series 7, at least that's what they used to ask you to do. But to be precise, we really should use something along these lines. We should type in the whatever the rate is and the price. And watch what happens as we type in let's make it a discount bond first. We put in a price that we only paid $900, so our initial cash outflow for the bond was $900, but it's an 8% bond, so we're going to get $80 for those years. And then finally we get our interest payment and our $1,000 back. And the approximation that we used was 9.47%. But the internal rate of return calculation, which is more precise, actually tells us the bond is 9.6%. But it's a pain in the neck to do it. You know, they're not going to ask them the Series 7. And, of course, the net present value always winds up being zero because we're paying for what we're getting. Bonds are, you know, you pay, bonds are fixed. And then if we had a premium bond, then we would wind up getting less. The approximation tells us we're getting 6.67, and the internal rate of return says, no, you're really only getting 6.60. Cool? So you can use it for bonds, right? And get a very precise measurement. And then what about real estate? Now, going out, anybody interested in real estate? We're going to talk about real estate in a couple weeks before we end. Real estate is a real pain in the patootie, folks. It's really difficult. But it can be very profitable. And what many of us as individuals will do is we'll eventually buy a home. And so we have some real estate investment. It's our home. You can't live in a mutual fund or a stock. But you can live in a house. And it will, assuming San Diego is not getting more undesirable, it's becoming more desirable. But sometimes people pay way too, I think prices now are not too bad, but they're pretty expensive. So sneaking around Chula Vista, you can find a duplex, not in the best area and probably not in the best condition, for around $480,000, $500,000. Anybody look? Use Zillow or Trulia, or if you need a good real estate agent, I can give you a good real estate agent. He is very honest, which is unusual in this industry. And I tell you true things about stockbrokers too, don't worry. And he sends me these things periodically to check out. And so there are a few of them out there. Usually we're looking like $550,000, $600,000. But let's say we got a duplex for $480,000. Now, do we pay for these things in cash? No, but let's say you did. Let's say you had $480,000 lying around the house. Now, what's the income we're going to receive? Could we reasonably get $1,600 from a one-bedroom, two-bedrooms each? If they're one bedrooms, what are they getting? Two units. $1,500? $1,200 or $1,300? Yeah, maybe you're right. Other people, I've seen, I go on Craigslist and I see people asking for one bedrooms. What? Renting it out. Yeah, what kind of rent are we going to get? Let's say 12. Let's say, how about $1,250? Will you take that? Now, we also should probably take some, you know, we have to pay taxes and we have to pay insurance, so we should net that out. But let's leave it for the rent. Now, we're assuming that the rental income is growing about 2% a year. It's actually been growing more than that, but it goes in spurts. And so after 30 years, let's say at the end of the 30 years, it's now worth $1 million. Do you think that could happen? It could double. No? I don't know. What happened over the last 30 years? In 30 years. Yeah? Well, it doubled and then fell by half and then doubled again. Right? So that's the problem with real estate. You got to buy at the right time. But as long as you're in, so let's say, so if we only get $1,250 as starting, what it's saying is, you know, it, the net present value is negative. It's not really. Oh, we're expecting 10%. I put my acquired rate of return at 10%. I put that in here. 10%. But it's saying you're going to get about 8.4%. So if we change it, if we're just happy with 8%, let's change it to 8%. Oops, it didn't like that. 80%. Now, you see what happens? See what happens when you change it to 80%? It says, forget it, buddy. You're out of your mind. It's not worth anything. You're not going to get 80%. If we put in 80%, then it's saying, yeah, it's a good deal. Go ahead. But do people buy real estate with $480,000 down? No, they have to put down a down payment. So let's change it now to about one quarter of this. You put the, actually like 0.3%. Woo. So 30%. So you multiply it times. So you only need about 150 grand to get in. But what do you have to pay now? Interest and a mortgage, right? So that's going to pull whatever it is. I didn't do the calculation. I should have done the calculation beforehand. Let's say I'm sorry. I'm going to do that right now, real fast. Oops. Excuse. So plus 480. So we're getting a mortgage for about 336. A mortgage at say 5% would be this divided by 1,000 times what is it? 4.5. Let's say. What do you mean? That's not right. No, 4.5. What's going on here? F2, make it bigger. Okay. Ah! What am I doing wrong? What is the... Oh, 4.5? Was somebody telling me 4.5? What is wrong? Yeah, there we go. I got it. So $1,500 a month. So we have to subtract minus. Let's just leave it at 1512. Now we have to. Okay, there we go. So we're not getting the full rent. Right? We have to pull money out. We're paying $1,500 a month. A month for 30 years for the mortgage. So we're not getting as much rent, but. What does it tell us? Aha! Because we used other people's money to make our money, even though we're paying the bank $1,500 a month now, we get a better rate of return. And that's why the real estate agents and the real estate people scream and jump up and down when we say real estate's returned about 7-8% over decades. They go, no, he's not comparing apples to apples. It's because in real estate we use leverage. We use other people's money to make our money. Does that make sense? And we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that later. Because we're going to learn how we can do the same thing in stocks, just not as much. We can't do it as much. In real estate, it used to be, during the bubble in the 2000s, you could have 10% down if you're non-owner occupied, which means investment property. If you're going to live there and you're a first-time home buyer, 3% down. 5% down, because they want people to own a home. But if you're the real estate investor, they now want 25%. So who's got 150 grand laying around the house? You know, it's not easy. Okay, so you understand how it's going working out, and we're going to see that in stocks. In stocks, they want 50% down. You have to buy it. You'll see that next week.
Can you put the very young number, the
108,000. That's saying. Net present, this is what you're going to, this is, you know, when you speak at the language in the graduate level school, they're saying this project has a net value of 108 grand. When all is said and done, you're going to create $100,000 worth of value from this project. You See, does that make sense? Yeah. What we did is we calculated the present value. We did not include what we had to pay to do the investment. And then we said, if it's greater than what we paid for it, cool. If it's less than, so if we did the one we did, if we did the model we did, what would we would see is that this would be $144,000 more. We would say, oh, we're paying $144,000 for it, but we're getting, you know, what would that be? $144,000? Like $250,000. We think it's worth $250,000. You see? That's how we do it in here, because I think it's just a hell of a lot easier. And this to me seems a little, not, I shouldn't use the word elitist, but
nitpicking.
But once you get into the world of finance with the numbers where you wind up with a lot more zeros, that's what they're going to want you to talk. They're going to want you to speak the language, okay? Okay, so that was cool. Did you see real estate? Is real estate a great investment? Yes, it can be, and it can be a nightmare. A literal nightmare, folks. So be careful. But what if, we just get to what Laura said. What if now you're working at a utility company or a port district or whatever, and you're looking at building an airport or a nuclear reactor? Same idea, except you see all the zeros? It just gets a whole lot bigger, right? So let's say we had to build a nuclear reactor, and it costs us $2.5 billion. But we're going to generate $250 million a year in electricity. And we're going to raise that, we'll assume it raises with inflation. And then after 30 years, what happens to the nuclear reactor? Yeah, you got to decommission it. But that's a whole political problem right now. So that means you got to spend another $1 billion to take it apart. Why aren't they doing that? Why is Santa Onofre, even though it hasn't been in operation for years, why aren't they taking it apart and decommissioning it? Do you know? Because they don't know what to do with the damn rods. The uranium is sitting in the ground. They don't know what to do with it. There's no place to store it, so all the nuclear reactors have to store it at the nuclear reactor until the United States gets around to actually deciding where to put all this crap. They want to put it in some mountain out in Nevada or Yucca Mountain. Have you heard of that? But it's supposedly right on a fault line. Okay, and you know this stuff has to sit for hundreds of thousands of years. It's got a half-life of 25,000 years. So in 25,000 years, half of the plutonium would be gone. And another 25,000 years, one-quarter of it will be gone. And then another 75,000, one-eighth of it will be gone. And 100,000 years, there'll still be a 16th of it sitting around. And that stuff is really dangerous, plutonium. Don't eat plutonium. It's not good for you. Okay. But here's where you get some really weird, you might want to make the graph because you can get some really strange results. Let's take a look. Here's two different investments. The first one, you pay $10,000 and the next year you get $15,000. Is that cool? 50% return your value? Internal rate of return says. Here's one, they give you $10,000, but next year you got to pay $15,000. And the internal rate of return says that that's a 50% return on your investment. So you got to be careful, right? Sometimes it gives you really weird results. So we must always check if the results make sense. Cool. Okay, so let's go back. All right, so as we saw with the spreadsheet, internal rate of return can give you some very bizarre and unreliable results. Sometimes there can be more than one internal rate of return. And you'll see that if you see the graph. You'll see the graph start off like this, and then it goes below the line, and then it comes back up, and then it goes below the line again. So there are actually two or three internal rates of return. So you have to be really careful. You have to look at it, especially if it's odd, unusual streams of cash flows. But the ones that we deal with, stocks, bonds, and maybe real estate, it's not going to happen. Okay, so I like to want to make sure our internal rate of return is reasonable. So how does having a spreadsheet change the way we do our calculations? And the answer is not much. But it makes it much easier. Tables aren't that hard, are they? And it gives you an extremely precise result when calculating your rate of return from a stream of future income, which is exactly what we do not want you to rely on. Okay? I hope we have, you know, have impressed upon you the need to not make any bold predictions like this is what it's going to be. And if you forget it, you know, you're blowing smoke. Because unless you are calculating the return from a very predictable source, bonds, precision is your enemy. Never forget you're predicting the future, and as the old saying goes, prediction is difficult, especially about the future. You like that one? Suppose it's been attributed to Niels Bohr, who was the guy who created the hydrogen atom model, the proton with the electron going around it. Or it's been attributed to Mark Twain. He probably wasn't Mark Twain. Probably Niels Bohr. So thank you for your time. Is that cool? And now, see, here's a little dirty little secret. You're going to go to State or some other place, and they're going to treat you like, oh, you're going to be, you know, so much more sophisticated and erudite. It's the same crap. You already know what it takes to be prudent, long-term oriented investors. You already know that you have all the tools you need. Now, there are dozens of other models, folks. I showed you the ones I think are the best, but there are others. And a couple of you, when you gave in, that was the online class, I think. Some of you gave in the Chapter 8 assignments, the bonus assignments, which you could basically say whatever your demo please. But some of the people in the online class said, this is cool. I'm going to try this out. I'm like, okay, good luck. Just a couple. Just two, the more gambly type folks. All right, so that's it. Now, to review, okay, so what I would like you to do now is a couple of questions. We'll give you another opportunity Thursday, another opportunity next week. And then I make these into a presentation for our last review class.
We're not going to give you this
today. No, but if you want to, because I have some people, they just forget about it. Oh, I forgot. But if you want to pick it, bring it back on Thursday, that's great. But if you have your questions now, I'll give you more of these. I'll make more of these because I like this. Is my fun. I really have a lot of fun time with it. Okay, so Carlos is here. Okay, not here. All right. Turn in your assignments, even if they're late. I'll stick around for a few more minutes. If you want to go, do any other problems in chapters 10 or 6 or 6? Getting an education? Cool. Okay. So Edgar, yes, Raquel, okay, you're sticking around. John is here, Arturo is here, Thomas Gutierrez, no, Kathleen, Carlos, Guillermo, Jonathan Moore, no, Aram, Nicholas, thank you. Okay, how are you doing, Nicholas? Yang, how are you doing?
You're doing good.
You're doing great. I'm really proud of you, Yang. I speak sometimes too quickly, right?
Okay.
It's okay? Okay, I apologize. Joshua, Oliver's here. Ramel is here. Azucena, Andrea is here. Okay. Yes. Nick. Ooh. Okay. Have a seat. I'm going to show right now. You don't have to. You can leave. But Matthew asked a great question. How do you do that? Now, remember, everything's on the website. If you go to Chapter 8, you'll see a presentation on how to do it, technical analysis presentation. But let's show you how to do it. So first, let's go to Yahoo Finance. What company do you want to take a look at? Anyone, let's take a look.
Disney.
Let's take a look at Disney. All right, so the graph they give you is, just today. But if we go 5-year, there you see 5-year. Now, Here's where you want to do the technical analysis. You click on chart, and what does it have? Does it have 5-year? No, it doesn't. No, so let's go to 5-year. Now, here's where we say we want a... Now, look at all the dozens of technical indicators. I think they're all garbage, but you decide. And then we want the moving average. So we want a 50-day, simple. And look at all the different types of moving averages. Exponential, double exponential, triple exponential. We just want the simple moving average. Don't mess with the offset. And I don't even know what this means. Oh, close. Yeah, we want the closing price. Okay. So notice that the first one's going to be purple. You know what? Let's dim the lights. On the right-hand side, down twice. I know it's bizarre. Okay, good. So the first color is going to be purple. So let's save that. So there. So what this is doing here, the blue is the daily maneuvers, and you see it's very chaotic. And the 50-day is smoothing it out. Then what we're going to do is we're going to now do another moving average, but this one will be the 200-day moving average. And that's the one that they talk about the most, the golden cross, the death cross. And we'll change the color to, green or something. Save. So now, and see when you move the mouse, you move the wheel, it changes the years. Okay, so let's go back a little bit. Okay. So now the green is the 200-day. The 200-day moving average. So when the purple, the 50-day, goes below the 200-day moving average, that's called the death cross. That's a bad time. That's the time to sell. But in this case, it was already too late. And then when the 50-day moves above the 200-day, that's supposedly a good time to sell. I mean, buy. Was that a good time to buy? Yeah, not bad. Not bad. But now you had to hold on when it dropped, which I guess, and there was a spike. See, that's the volume. These little bars here mean the volume. So that something happened that day, and Disney volume spiked, and it fell. That might have been that John Carter movie, which was a total disaster. They paid $200 million for it. But see, you follow it all the way up, and now it didn't quite go below. And since then, Disney spiked because something happened really cool with Disney. Forgetting that was a couple weeks ago. A couple days ago, I guess. So you see what we're doing? Now, somebody in the online class said, ooh, I like the 50-day and the 15-day. So she was actually playing with it. So let's get rid of, this is where I get lost. Ask me if I know what I'm doing. Okay, so if we change this guy, if we right-click on this, no, it doesn't work. How do we get rid of it? Oh, well, I guess we go here. So let's get rid of the 300-day. Or how can we change it? No, let's get rid of it. And what she said, and she was excited about this, she thought this was cool, is she liked the 50-day and the 15-day. And I've heard people who use this. So let's use that. She was much more excited about that. She said you could do. She was excited about the 15-day and the 50-day. That's the same idea. When the shorter one, in this case, the 15-day, which is the green. Wait a minute, right? Yeah, 15-day. When the green goes below the purple, the 15-day goes below the longer one, 50-day, that's a good time to sell. Well, again, it was already too late here, in my humble opinion. Here, I guess, you still had a little bit upside because it's already jumped, but you already missed that. And then here, too late. Here, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of technical analysis. But you guys are going to get 10 points. All you got to do is write something that sounds reasonable, even though you don't know what the hell you're doing. And turn it in, you get 10 points. Is that easy? And then I ask you, and the reason I'm not trying to give you free 10 points, I really want you to see what you think. And then play with it. Play with the Bollinger Bands, whatever the hell they're supposed to be. Put in the Bollinger Bands. They're really popular, Bollinger Bands. Let's put those in. And that's supposed to, I guess, something to do with the range. I don't know. Look it up and see what you think. And then there are all these technical. So just go online and start looking at these guides. But you could become a technical analyst on Wall Street, making $500,000 and laughing at piano. And you can say if the market doesn't go up or go down, it'll go sideways, and make that much money. Is that cool? I like it. Okay, so Thursday, bring the calculator, one page of notes, Scantron, one page of handwritten notes. I'll have the formula sheets, and be awesome. Get plenty of rest.
Unfortunately, Thursday, I have mandatory training for work.
In the morning or in the afternoon?
Yeah, in the morning from 8 to 4.
Can you?
I was wondering, I know on Monday, I have, all of my classes canceled. I can come at that time.
Okay, Monday. Send me an email. What time is Monday? Monday early? Let me look on my phone.
From, 11 and after. Well, 11:30 and after.
Okay, so let's try for noon. Send me an email, okay, because I'll forget. I'll have my phone with me. If it's not on my phone, it doesn't exist. It's not in my agenda. Okay, here's what you do.
Wasn't another option not doing, two of them?
No, that was part of the three.
Okay.
No, I wanted you to do three. So do a third one. I wanted you to do three, but in this case, you did, who'd you do, FedEx and UPS? Why don't you do DHL? I think you can buy DHL on the New York Stock Exchange. Or it doesn't matter, just do any company. And then over here, just remember we talked about cyclical and growth companies? So what is a company like an airline company? What do you think? Well, Southwest, I guess people would call it a blue chip. It's not quite large. It's not, look how far, it's getting big. I think it's 30 billion. But it's cyclical. Because more activity, economic activity, people fly more. Okay, questions? No, exam is Thursday.
No, yeah, I just want to say...
Look on the website. It always tells you when the next exam is.
Oh, no, yeah, but I sent you an email. So
okay. I like it. Students will come up to me and go, did you get my email? I said, I don't know. When did you send it? Oh, about 10 minutes ago. Okay, Kathleen, no problem. Sorry, teasing you. Yes?
I don't know how to do this. I'm not sure I'm doing any of this.
Okay, this one is exactly like this one.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the interest? Zero coupon bond.
Okay.
What's the interest?
Zero.
So we take zero times whatever is,
mm-hmm.
and then we take 1,000 times the
okay.
present value, not the 5%, prime okay. present value multiplier. Now this one, you did it. You figured it out.
No, okay.
Tricky. Jennifer, good job. This is 121? Okay, cool. Somebody turn on the light, please. Okay, turn this off. Dun, 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 dun. Turn that.